We'll pick up the countdown shortly here, and H-minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society.
One other party is in this conference.
All right. All righty then. I had a little difficulty, but I have managed to get this working. I am calling from a friend's mobile phone from Grand Beach Provincial Park, which is 100 kilometers or so north of beautiful Winnipeg, Manitoba, crown jewel of the Prairie Provinces. And my impression so far is that it is significantly cooler and wetter than I had anticipated, considering that this is summer in the northern hemisphere of the Earth. My friends who have a vacation place up here assure me that it is not normally like this, and I assume they must be telling the truth, because if it were usually like this, nobody would have bothered building a beach resort up here. Well, what do I have to talk about this week that I've gone to such great trouble to connect? I really hope I am connected, because of course I have no internet service up here, so I can't check in comm to make sure that I'm actually coming through. I guess we'll see, shan't we? So the first thing to remember is that always is that this program is not Sick Sad World with Daria Morgendorfer. In other words, I do try to provide an optimistic view of the world, a question of what can we do, rather than what idiocy are people doing, and, you know, that sort of thing. That if you want shows where people complain about the condition of the world, those are a dime a dozen. If I'm going to complain about the condition of the world, I try to come up with something where I can suggest some way it could be improved. On the drive up from Winnipeg, we passed a Indian casino, I guess is what you'd call it, and my friend here, Ed, who is driving, informed me that the folks who operate it would really like to have a grade-separated road so that local traffic and traffic that's going through their community would not mix, which would make life much easier for people crossing the street, because half of them are on one side of the street and half of them are on the other side of the street, and people, you know, need to cross the street and not be blown down, which is apparently a serious problem at certain times of the year when there's a great deal of traffic going back and forth, and not much of a problem other times of year when this is not the most popular spot to be. And I'm just reminded that the provincial park was formed in 1962 after the Canadian National Railroad, which had owned the area, decided to end their railway service, which had been running for 50 years and more. That people had gone out by rail to visit Grand Beach and the amusements there. And eventually they decided they didn't want to be in that business anymore. But not only did they shut down the rail service, they also eventually tore up the rail lines, which strikes me as very unfortunate, because if they had a rail line, you could say electrified light rail or something like that, not, you know, the old service was heavy rail pulled by steam locomotives, and that's an expensive business to be in, for sure, operational cost-wise, but in terms of capital costs, you know, the electrified rail costs a bit more, but its operating costs are remarkably low. Anyhow, but if you could get on a train in downtown Winnipeg and simply ride it out for an hour, you know, half an hour or an hour to get to Grand Beach, very probably people would do it even more now, even more than they do now when you have to drive. And one group of people it would be very much to the benefit of is the merchants in the Central Business District of Winnipeg. Because, of course, now people who are coming out here to stay for a week or a month, as I do, and in fact, Ed has lived out here over the years. He got his master's degree. He was living out here and commuting to the University of Manitoba, which is apparently a fairly difficult thing to do. You know, you try cracking your brain with engineering textbooks for a whole day, and then, or worse yet, his the practical part of his master's work, which involved core samples of Athabascan tar sands, which had to be handled under sub-freezing conditions, because if they weren't handled under sub-freezing conditions, they wouldn't give him any results. I have a copy of his thesis. It is quite impressive, just the technique that he had to invent and the machinists he was working with had to invent in order to do the measurements he was taking. Well, that's neither here nor there. The point was that he then had to drive for an hour or more to get to where he was living. Which, again, if you've ever done that, it isn't much fun. But it strikes me that for when people come out here to stay for a week or a month, that if they had a train that they could ride into central Winnipeg, they might do business with the merchants in the central business district of Winnipeg, whereas, as it is, they're driving as the shortest distance they can possibly drive, because it's such a hassle to drive someplace, park, drive back, and so they do their business with the, real Canadian superstore or the Walmart or something, which is at the edge of town. So, there's a lot of that. And, it's an example of how there are many different ways of doing things, and they have different results. And different people are benefited by them. Different people are inconvenienced by them. But, I swear that I had a point to what I'm talking about, but as so often happens, I think I forgot to write it down, and it slipped my mind. How do you like that? But no, other than that, I was going to remark that it's always very important. I talk about politics on this show sometimes, mostly in somewhat abstract terms. But because politics is part of how we solve problems. And, of course, my orientation is engineering. Yeah. My orientation is engineering, and so politics is not what I'm good at. And so I can only give sort of general observations that anybody might give, really. Nice, fluffy little doggy here. But one of the general observations I have, it's very easy to be anti-anything. And again, I try not to be anti-things. I tend to be pro-things. And that's for two reasons. The first is negativity in general is not constructive. Somebody tells you about how terrible a state the world is in, you're going to be thinking about the terrible state of the world. You're not going to be thinking about the better world that we could have and the way that we could possibly get to it. But being anti-anything is very dangerous. You may say, being anti-fascist, being anti-capitalist. Now, I'm not going to try and tell you that fascists or plutocrats are an oppressed minority that needs protecting. No, siree Bob, I'm not going to do that. What I am going to tell you, though, is that when you are anti-anything, you get riled up, right? You get riled up against somebody or something. Well, it tends to affect your thought processes. And you become accustomed to having these negative emotions, which are incited by, frequently, some leader of the movement. And because the negative emotions tend to shut down your higher reasoning skills, it becomes possible for the leader of the movement to lead you around by the nose and lead you into things that you hadn't initially planned for. And here's the key, right? In 1916, Lenin was giving speeches in St. Petersburg about abolishing the police, how this was necessary to abolish the police. In 1918, Lenin was turning the guns of the police against communists. That's the danger, right? When you're excited to be against anything, you get used to following what the leader of the movement says. And when the leader of the movement changes what he's saying, and this is true of any political movement, you're too invested in being a part of his show to stop and say, hey, wait, this isn't what I signed up for. I wanted something different. So that's a thing to think about, right? Be careful of being against anything. And that's one reason why I always try to be for things rather than against. I'd rather support something that's an imperfect solution to a problem than just oppose the problem. But here is the other half. I hope you can hear me. The wind has come up something fierce, and the water is very ugly looking. And Ed wants to assemble his catamaran, but I do not believe we are getting out on the water today. He said he was thinking of going for a swim, but I think that's off the menu. Half an hour ago it was sunny. Now it is not. But what is there to say? I see very many people who are very negative about the current state of the world, right? People say, this is going to kill us, this is going to kill us, that is going to kill us, the third thing is going to kill us. Well, there's an inherent problem that arises. Yes? The inherent problem that arises is that when you're convinced that things are bad and can only get worse, you don't look for solutions. I have tried to emphasize on this program that the problems we are facing mostly have solutions. I can't tell you what all the solutions are. I can point to a few solutions, right? But I can't tell you what all the solutions are. First, to do that, I would need universal knowledge and universal competence, two things which I am very far from possessing or attaining, which probably no finite being can possess or attain. But given that I do not claim to be God, I do my best to point out solutions that I have identified and to point out areas where I do not know what the solution is, but perhaps someone with a different set of skills and a different background might be able to come up with something. Anyhow, so yes, you know, if I talk about nuclear power and space travel a whole lot, well, firstly, it's because they're things that interest me, and so I know a bit more about them. So I'm able to make suggestions that are a bit more useful in those directions than in others where I know less or where I have less of a mental orientation. I also believe that they are very powerful tools. I believe they can be very powerful signs of hope. And as I said, there's hope and there's despair. If we are living in a world where people are caught up in despair, then they won't even look for the solutions that they need, that we all need. And so the first thing is to reject counsels of despair. When people tell you it's hopeless, don't believe that. Because the powers that humanity has, and I keep emphasizing this, the powers that humanity has today are immense. They are colossal. They are titanic. They are all those adjectives which mean, which refer to the, you know, gods and powers of ancient mythology. Anyway, I think I've run to the end of the hour, so if I haven't quite yet, here's Tobe.